Isn't the youth band amazing? So I don't know if you realize that's what they were. Mike was going to be out of town this week, and Bobby's been raving about how great the youth band is. We're like, let's give him a shot. And just absolutely amazed. And there's actually two or three of them couldn't even be here this morning. So if you come to youth group on Sunday nights, you know that's what you're getting. I just think it's been pretty neat the way this youth group has just continued to build and grow. And remember, like a year ago, Bobby wanted to have worship going on in the youth program. And like Mike and like our Sunday morning praise team would come on Sunday nights. And then eventually, just like the youth, just kind of took up the leadership and took it over. And it's just been really neat to see that happen. And so here they are leading us as a whole church, which is just, it's just neat the way all that stuff happens. But I'm moving back to our stuff now. Some of you, are there any puzzle pieces still left in the room? Some of them are on some of the chairs. Oops, I just lost mine. There was like some question last week as to, well, that one's gone. Oh, good. Perfect. Thank you. Ooh, an edge. A very valuable edge piece. There was some question last week as to whether or not you're supposed to take them. And my response back was almost sarcastic when I was asked. I'm like, what, do you think I was going to put that thing together next week and like think that every single piece is going to be left? No, I mean, come on. That would be, how frustrating would that be to like try to put together like, ooh, somebody took one. Of course, yeah, definitely take them with you. They're ready to be taken. Just to kind of remember this, maybe put them on the dashboard of your car, put them on your dresser, just something to kind of be thinking about the perspective that we need to have. And last week, if you missed last week, it was all about just kind of taking a step back and just seeing an overview of your life and how every season, as Ecclesiastes 3 says, every season of your life, something different comes your way. Every season of your life is like a different puzzle piece, which is handed to you. And each of those pieces is coming together in one day when you're in heaven with God at the end of your life. You will see kind of how every piece of that puzzle fit together to make something beautiful. And if you notice, there's kind of some ribbing on that puzzle piece. It's because it's a 3D puzzle. And so once you get the whole thing together, you can see there's a different depth, there's a different dimension to this. And that's how God will take your life and your puzzle and your picture and put it together with every other picture of every other puzzle that's ever been put out there. And you'll see really how you fit into the whole scheme of eternity in a very beautiful and meaningful way. But several people asked me this question like, well, hey, I was kind of mad because you never showed me what the picture was. And I'm like, well, then I think you got part of the subtle thing I was trying to get across. And that is that you're given puzzle pieces to your life. And yeah, you go through life just like you left last week going, but what's the big picture? Well, I'll tell you this. It's a Thomas Kincaid picture. That's all you need to know. Do you trust me that it's pretty? So you're like, I don't even know who that is. Just Google Kincaid, you'll see. All he does is just create pretty pictures that make you like kind of sit and quietly reflect and go, oh, that's nice. Just kind of reflectful, peaceful kind of things. He always makes, he's known as, you know, making beautiful paintings. So all you really need to know is a Kincaid picture. So just trust me, it's going to be something pretty. I didn't just give Jackson a sheet of cardboard, have him draw something and say, here, we'll cut this up and have a good fun with everybody. No, it's just like God gives you something beautiful to make with your life. I'm giving you a piece of a Kincaid puzzle, which when it comes together is going to be beautiful. And if you want to know what it looks like, you can ask God on that day when you see him and he'll tell you, if you remember. But the same with your life, you don't get to see it. So last week we talked about the perspective that comes when we kind of get this big overview picture, kind of be able to see things from 20,000 feet, and be able to see things you never saw before because you can see the big picture when you get that kind of perspective. There's another kind of perspective that you get when you look back on life. They call it hindsight. We often say hindsight is 2020, right? We can see things clearly now, things that we didn't see in the moment. Looking back now, we see how that puzzle piece worked together with this puzzle piece. And maybe you don't see the big picture yet. Maybe you don't see everything yet, but at the very least, you can begin to see how there was something going on and there was something that you needed to learn at age 15 so you'd have it when you're age 30. There was something that you had at age 30 so you'd have it when you're age 45. There's just different things that weave together and hindsight gives you a unique perspective on life. And there's always this idea, there's always this question, what if you could live life with the perspective of hindsight? Wouldn't that be amazing if you could live life with the perspective of hindsight? Before Melissa passed back in July, we got to go together to see the play Joseph. Joseph, an amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Anybody all seen the play Joseph? Anybody seen the Donny Osmond movie that I had to show just so you could get a picture of it? Some of you are like, I saw the play. No, I didn't see Donny Osmond. Sorry. No. I will say, is Emily here today? Emily in the house? No? Okay. Emily, who comes to Essential quite often, was the narrator. She in the play. Emily Hogan Miller. I always mispronounce her last name, so I just go Hogan. So if you see her, just say hey to her. She just did an amazing job as the narrator, and so much that it just kind of like left a lasting impact. And the whole story of Joseph, as I'm going through my situation, is coming back up in my mind, And I think like the first or second Sunday I came back to Essential, sure enough, who do I see in the lobby? I had heard that she started coming to Essential off and on, but I'd never seen her. And so I'm sitting there at the door saying hi to people, and all of a sudden I'm like, you're the narrator. And she's like, no, I'm Emily. And so it was just kind of neat seeing her, and she started talking, and so we linked up on Facebook. And I just, you know, wrote a little note on Facebook and just said, I just want to thank you for that. It's left a really lasting impact. And she says, well, I need to let you know, as I was doing the role of narrator, kind of what helped me get into the role and helped me understand the role that I was supposed to be playing was I approached it as though I was the Holy Spirit speaking to Joseph. Because the way that the story goes on is you got Joseph who's living out his life, and the narrator there is telling the story to a group of school children about the story of Joseph. But somehow she sort of like interjects herself into Joseph's life, and then he's not in Joseph's life, and you're kind of like, well, nobody sees her, but Joseph kind of hears her. And so really that's kind of the role she is. She's the Holy Spirit there in his life. And that little clip I want to make sure you got was a line from the song that just stuck with me. And Joseph's at one of the worst points in his life, and she says to him, Joseph, we've read the book, and you come out on top. She says, listen, I can tell you from hindsight, I know how the story ends. And looking back on your life, you don't need to despair right now while you're in the middle of the prison cell, because we've read the book and we know how this thing turns out. And so there the Holy Spirit is, just whispering to him right there. It is God with Joseph in the midst of all of his struggles, all of his trials, letting him know God is with you. Everything is going to be okay. And of course, whenever you read the story of Joseph, it says that phrase that God was with Joseph over and over and over again. And the amazing thing about Joseph's life is that he actually lives every day with the understanding of the clarity that comes from knowing that God is in complete control of his life. And to understand how amazing this is, you kind of understand everything that happens to Joseph. I'm going to assume that not every one of you in here knows his story. The story of Joseph is found in Genesis chapter 37 through 50. And to kind of give you an overview of his story is like a series of ups and downs. And if you were to assume that God's presence is based on the circumstances of your life, you would begin to doubt seriously whether or not God is really with you or not in these different circumstances. So in order to kind of tell you the story in a way that you might remember it, I'm going to like go from, now if you're like sitting right here, you get to decide which half you want to be on. This half of the room is going to be the good news side, and you guys are going to be the bad news side. Sorry, it's just the way it is. And before I tell you something good, I want you guys to say back to me, oh, this is going to be good. All right, that's what you're like. That's like when you're like expecting something, like I'm not talking like a Christmas present from your grandma. I'm talking like a Christmas present from like the good grandma, like the one who gets you good stuff, not the one who like wraps up jelly for you. True story. I'm talking about the other grandma who like always gives you money, and when you open it, you think to yourself, oh, yeah, it's gonna be good news. And you guys are bad news, and I'll just tell you how I like bad news. I just always say, just give it to me straight. Alright, if bad news is coming, just like don't hem and haw, just tell me what it is, so just, there it is. Alright, so we're gonna go through his life. He starts off, born to Jacob, and he is Jacob's favorite son. Because, Jacob had a few wives, and this was like his favorite wife. Dysfunction side story. This is why you have problems when you have more than one woman. Anyways, that was all going on. However, he played favorites, and Joseph got to be his favorite wife. However, all of his brothers hated him because he was dad's favorite brother. I mean, you can imagine how that works out. Favorite kid, everybody else is jealous, they don't really like that. So it was a little difficult there in the family situation. However, well, what? Yeah, this is going to be good. He was such a favorite kid that he kind of got out of doing all the manual labor, and dad gives him this really fancy coat so he can be a supervisor and oversee all the work that goes on, not just of all the servants in the household, but also also get to oversee his brothers. Wouldn't you love it if you were the little brother and you were put in charge of all the big brothers? I mean, yeah, that just doesn't happen, but that's kind of how everything was rolling for Joseph. However, his brothers hated him for it, beat him up, threw him in a pit, and sold him as a slave. Because that kind of thing can happen when this happens. So you would probably agree that's bad news. So he's over in Egypt, and he gets sold to a guy named Potiphar. Yeah, this is going to be good. Because Potiphar was a really wealthy guy who had a lot of money. And he was actually the chief. He was like one of the captains in Pharaoh's army. So a very powerful, influential guy. And Joseph actually rises up to be like the head honcho of everything that Potiphar owns. He ends up becoming the boss, like the underboss to this guy Potiphar. So that's a pretty good position. If you're going to be a slave, I mean, there were some who were like building pyramids, but this guy gets to be in the house, air conditioning. Let's just go with it. I know it's before that days, but hey, you get the eye picture. Either you're going to be out in the fields, you're going to be in the house. He gets to be in the house. Everything's going good. However, Potiphar's wife thinks he's hot. No, that was not good news. This is not good news. I know some of you over here was like, whoa, hey. No, this is not a good thing. This is not a good thing at all. She thinks he's hot, and she tries to seduce him. However, he says, oh, no, we don't have to take our clothes off to have a good time and drink some cherry wine. We can dance and party on. Yeah, that was old 80s tune, wasn't it? Yeah, that was a good song back in the day. I actually saw a skit where they start singing that in the middle of telling the story. That's where it came to mind. He says, no, that's just not how I roll. I don't want any part of that. So it's amazing. Here he is. He's sold as a slave. He's in Potiphar's house. He's making the best of a bad situation. She comes on him and says, no, I'm not doing that kind of thing. However, she falsely accuses him of rape and gets him thrown in prison, where he sits for 12 years. Now just think about where you were 12 years ago. Just pause for a minute. Think about where you were 12 years ago. If it's hard, think of something like somebody's age. Like I've got, like my oldest son is 7 years old. So this would be like, well before I even had kids. I think about maybe like how many years you've been married. So like where would you have been at in your marriage? Or maybe you weren't even married. Where were you in school? Just kind of think where you were 12 years ago. There's one person who's going, I wasn't even alive 12 years ago. Yeah, that's okay. Just imagine now, none of that stuff happened because you've been sitting in prison for the past 12 years. 12 years is a long, long time. It just kind of goes off in one verse. He was there 12 years. And you can see how his life has these series of ups and downs. Good news, bad news, good news, bad news. And every time there's bad news that comes into his life, there's this little phrase that says, but the Lord was with Joseph. I'm just going to read you kind of a summary of some of the stories we just told over in Genesis chapter 39. It says, now Joseph was taken down to Egypt and he ends up in Potiphar's house. And it says, and the Lord was with Joseph. It says, and he prospered and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. And when his master saw that the Lord was with him, so it was evident to Potiphar that the Lord was with Joseph. It was evident to Potiphar by the way he lived and the way he embraced the circumstance and the situation that God was with him. You see, Joseph had this amazing ability to be able to live life with a perspective of hindsight. Because in hindsight, we'll look back over our life and say, well, God was with me. It's like that poem, Footprints. I remember Rob shared that this past summer, that poem, Footprints. If you've never read it, it's about, you go through difficult times. And you see there's only one set of footprints. You look at Jesus and say, hey, what happened there? Where were you? He says, no, that's when I carried you. And in hindsight, you're going to look back and see that God was with you even in your darkest time. And so Joseph decides he's going to live his life in the present moment with certainty and clarity that God is with me even in the midst of my difficult time. And when I live in certainty that God is with me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to embrace the situation. That's why that song and the musical says, now go, Joseph. Go and just lean into this and go extract all there is to get out of the situation and embrace it. Now, if you were to live your life in such a way that you thought that God had forgotten you and abandoned you, would you be embracing the situation you're in as a slave in Egypt? Okay, and if you can't get that, if God's forgotten you and this chick throws herself at you, why be faithful to God at that point? Seriously. As a matter of fact, he even says to her, how could I do such a thing against my God? Which, by the way, hasn't done anything for me lately, but how could I do anything against him? Now, he didn't say, which, by the way, hasn't done anything good for me lately. He just says, I can't do this against God. He's right here with me in this moment. He sees everything I do. He's fully aware of everything I'm doing. And I can't do this thing against God. Why? Because he's living his life with a perspective of hindsight that knows that God's right there with him. And isn't that kind of frustrating, as I just read that story earlier? It says he's in Potiphar's house, and he knows the Lord's with him. And it says, let me read this line to you. This is fun. And the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. Well, thanks for that. I'm really glad my company's doing well because I'm faithful, but I'm not getting a raise. I'm really glad my company is doing so successful they could hire somebody better than me for my job and lay me off. That's wonderful. That's great. That's excellent. I'm so glad that they were able to afford a new computer system which replaces my job. I mean, that's kind of what's going on, is that the Lord was with Joseph, and Joseph's doing really well, and he's embracing the situation, but he doesn't get blessed for it. Potiphar gets blessed for it. He's embracing his situation, and when this girl comes on to him, he says, no, I'm not going to do that against God. And what does he get for that? He gets falsely accused and thrown in jail. Which may have happened to him had he done it. I mean, why not go ahead and do the deed if you're going to have to do the crime? I mean, that's how most of us think, right? But no, he says, I can't do this against God. He acts just like you would, or like I would, if we were 100% certain that God was in complete control of the situation and God was right there with him. And so he gets thrown in jail, and it says he becomes like a model prisoner. He becomes so good that the head prison ward doesn't even like pay him any attention. Or basically the prison ward just kind of gives him his own space and says, hey, will you just kind of like be my like number two guy in charge of the prison? And it says that he found favor with the prison warden. And I remember 10 years ago hearing Andy Stanley preach on this, and he says, if the best thing you can say about this year is that the prison warden liked you, it was not a good year. He says, I don't even want to know a prison warden. I don't want my life's future and my happiness to be dependent on whether or not the warden likes me. Things are not going well if the best thing that can be said about this past year was that the warden liked you. I mean, just saying, it's a difficult year when you're going down that road. But yet for Joseph, he embraces it. He invests himself in it fully. He's like, well, if I'm going to be a prisoner, I'm going to be the best prisoner there ever was. If I'm going to be a slave, I'm going to be the best slave there ever was. If I'm going to be a slave with a wife coming on to me, I'm going to be the most loyal slave you could ever ask for. It's the picture of the kid who wants to be on the football team and doesn't make the football team, so he becomes the manager of the football team. And he's right there, he's the water boy. Right there giving things out and cleaning the footballs for everybody. It's the person who doesn't get promoted to the job but decides, you know, I'm going to do my job with such excellence that the person who got promoted ahead of me will get promoted even beyond me. I'm going to do my job with excellence. Why? Because this is where God put me. This is the place he wants me to be in. And so I'm going to embrace this moment. And I'm going to get everything there is to get out of it. And this is where God wants me to be. Then I'm going to do everything I can possibly do to make the best of the situation. Now, I got to tell you, when you do that kind of thing, people will notice. Potiphar noticed. The prison guard noticed. And in my situation this past year, this has been something, this message and this thought has been kind of going through my mind. And in the midst of my thing, I mean, I had about 2.5 hours. Melissa passed away in Richmond, and so I had about 2.5 hours on the drive home to figure out what I was going to say to my kids. I mean, I'm glad I had the time. I'm glad I had the time to think about it. Time to get my emotions in check. And so I remember coming in and sitting down and grabbed the kids and just sat them up on my lap and shared with them that mommy had passed away and that mommy was up in heaven with Jesus. I remember telling them this. I said, but I want you to know that we're still a family and that God's in control and God's got a plan. And we don't know what that plan is, but God's got a plan. And he loves us. And I love you, and I'm not going anywhere. But God's got a plan. Jackson took the news and immediately ran upstairs and cried. I mean, you know, what you kind of expect. Jameson, I don't think he really understood at all what I was saying, but over the next couple of days, it would click with him. And Jameson, if you know that kid, he's my 4-year-old. He wears his heart on the sleeve. I mean, you don't have to wonder what the kid's thinking. He will show you expressively what he's thinking. If he's mad, you know, you get the mad face. If he's happy, you get the happy face. He's just going to tell you. And if he's sad, he's just going to bawl his eyes out. And so he was kind of like my crying buddy in this whole time. I mean, whenever he would cry, I would cry. Whenever I'd cry, he'd cry. And we just kind of have those sad times. And Jackson would walk in and see us crying and be like, oh, you guys again. And he'd walk out. But I remember about 2 weeks in, Jameson and I had a good cry that day, and Jackson comes in and he hands me a card. And on the card it says, Daddy, everything is going to be okay. People are helping us, and God has a plan. And you know, you talk about faith like a child. You know, the faith like a child is one who just believes. I mean, Jackson believes whatever I tell him, which I don't know how long it's going to last, but I'm enjoying it for now. He's starting to question. But at least on matters of God, he still trusts me in that. And so I'm sitting here reading this card written to me and given to me by my 7-year-old son, and it clicks with me that, you know, the thing that you shared with him after you had 2 hours to think about it and really kind of get some perspective on things and what you really need to say is true, and it's truth. And here you are in the midst of this, you know, worrying and wondering, and you need to get refocused and allow the faith that your son has. Because, you know, faith like a child, you don't really question. You just kind of go with it. You say God's got a plan, okay, God's got a plan. And I know that he's got I know that I'm not saying that, you know, Jackson's out of the woods, and I'm not saying, don't come to me and say, well, you gotta be careful. No, I know he still struggles with mommy. But, you know, through this thing, I've seen an amazing faith in that kid. I've seen a faith of a child that I need to emulate. And so I remember about 2 weeks in, I started this, you know, really begin just to emulate what I saw in him. And I remember I was going to a counselor, and around that time she started looking at me. She's like, you know, I'm just trying to figure this out. You just seem kind of detached from everything. I was like, detached? I don't feel like I'm detached at all. I'm fully aware of what's happened. I'm fully aware of what's going on. Trust me, they wake me up at 6 a.m. every morning. I'm fully aware that it's just me in the house. I'm not detached at all. I know my situation. Trust me. And we started talking, and she just, you know, and what I realized is that when you go through a situation with a certain faith or insight or knowledge, other people are going to look at you like you're weird. It just happens. I remember watching a video a friend of mine showed me about 6-7 years ago. He's in the military, and one of the things that they do when they would skydive is one of them would, like, strap what looked to me like a Volvo to his waist. And they would, like, you know, drag it out, and everybody would push it out of the plane. And then he would, like, have it strapped to him, and he'd parachute down with the Volvo strapped to his waist. And I thought to myself, no, that's just crazy. Why not just throw it out on its own and then you just follow it? He says, no, because I got to steer it where I need it to go. Well, good luck with that. You know, I mean, that's kind of my thing. I've never gone skydiving. I've always thought about it. But if I ever go, I want somebody strapped to me. I don't want a Volvo strapped to me. Are you with me on that? Because you got to, here's the crazy thing. It's not just like the free fall that you got to worry about. It's you both are landing on the ground. And that thing could hit you when you land on the ground. So you, and that's where like the guy lands it, and then like he parachutes down. I mean, it's just crazy watching this thing. And I looked at him, I said, you guys are nuts. You know that, right? And he's looking like, what are you talking about? And you see, here's what hit me was, it seems nuts to me because I don't have the training and the experience and the understanding of all that stuff that he's got. But with his training and with his experience and with the knowledge that he's been taught, somebody one day said to him, hey, let's strap a Volvo to your waist and jump out of a plane. He's like, okay, that'll work. And I'm still with you laughing like, no, it won't. But that's the way it is. When somebody who has a certain insight or a certain understanding is going through a situation and you don't share that same insight or understanding, you look at them and you think they're nuts. And when you see somebody living with faith like a child, you look and you go, that just doesn't make any sense. And Joseph was living his life as somebody who knew that God was with him, even though he was sold as a slave, even though he was wrongly put in prison. He was living his life with this perspective that God is in control and God is with me even in the midst of this. And so people took notice of that over and over and over again. And so it wasn't that I was detached. It was just I said, hey, I'm not in control of anything. God is in control of everything. He knew this was going to happen. He knew this day was going to come. In hindsight, I can now look back and see how he prepared me for certain things in the midst of all this. And so I'm just going to trust him. If anything else, I just need to lean into this. I need to go Joseph. And I just need to, you know, suffer and grieve as the best suffering and grieving husband and father as I could possibly be. Because I can't fight this. I can't fight this thing any more than Joseph would fight his situation. What's he going to do? Isn't that what we normally do when we're put in a situation that we don't like? We fight and rebel it. Well, if I got to be a slave, fine. I don't got to like it. And you have to beat me with a rod to give me what you want me to do. No, not Joseph. He took it like as if he had just been given the job of a lifetime. And he goes from that to being thrown into prison. He takes that like he's just been given the job of a lifetime. Oh, I get to be in prison? No problem, man. What can we do to make this place great? Whereas you, me, the rest of us, we'd be sitting there going, God, seriously? All right, fine, I'm just going to sit here until you get me out. Well, Joseph's situation gets even worse. He's been in prison for 12 years. And along comes this guy. There's these two guys who get put in prison, both of them influential and have a lot of good friends in high places. One's the Pharaoh's baker. The other is the Pharaoh's chief cupbearer. This is like his social security bodyguard kind of guy, the guy who would like drink stuff to make sure it's not poison right before he gives it to Pharaoh. So obviously he's sitting close to him at the party. And these two guys get thrown in jail. And just for a short time, and they need a favor, they need some help. Joseph's there to give them a favor, Joseph's there to give them some help. And for the baker, his life's not going to turn out too well, but for the cupbearer, things are going to go well, and he's going to get out of prison soon. And so Joseph's like, hey, I'm here to help you. If you could just kind of remember me, put in a good word for me, I told you why I'm here, you get why I'm here, you believe my story. At the very least, let's just kind of reopen the case, let's just kind of re-examine things. Maybe we can go back and ask Potiphar, really, maybe Potiphar's wife will realize it's been 12 years, and somebody's got to feel guilty, but maybe they're not even around anymore, maybe we can just retry my case. Just put in a good word for me with Pharaoh. And one of the toughest verses in all the scripture you'll find is in Genesis chapter 40, verse 23. And it says, but the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. I haven't seen that on a t-shirt at the Christian bookstore. And I would even imagine if you put that on a t-shirt at the Christian bookstore, somebody would probably accuse the store of selling a irreligious atheistic shirt. Right? Because we don't like the verses in the Bible that say, God was with Joseph, but everybody forgot about him. And you know how much longer he sits in prison before anybody remembers him? 2 more years. 2 more years. Wow. That's not just like God forgot of me, but then he remembered me like next week. Don't you think by the end of year one, you're pretty certain that guy's forgotten you and you're never going to hear from him again? And the thought had to go through his mind, you know, God, I see you working here. When this cupbearer shows up, he's like, I see you working. This is going to be my ticket out. And how hard would it have been for God to have worked in that situation in that moment? Not very at all. And yet he's forgotten about again. And the question that you have to answer, the question that I have to answer is, I'm going to put my trust in God's identity or God's activity? Or inactivity, I should say. At the end of the day, Joseph just said, you know, I trust that God is with me. And I'm going to act just like anybody else would act in my situation if they were completely certain that God is in control, God's working a plan, and God's doing something amazing. And that's how he acted and responded to every situation. And by the way, just kind of give you a quick overview perspective. What God was doing in the life of Joseph is really neat. Joseph, at the end of his life, could look back with a perspective of hindsight and see that, you know, he was right along, that God was with him. We now, thousands of years later, can look back with an overview perspective and really see what God was doing in the life of Joseph, something he didn't even picture and understand. What God was doing is, if you go back to Genesis chapter 15, God makes a promise to his great-grandfather, Abraham, he says, Abraham, I'm going to make you into a great nation, and I'm going to give this land to you. However, I can't give this land to you right now because the people who are living in the land, who own the land right now, don't deserve to be punished yet. And God basically says, I'm going to give them 400 years of rebellion before I punish them. So next time, by the way, you think God, some mean, evil, angry God, is just out to get people, just know that it takes him 400 years to finally lose his temper with somebody. Which is good, because I don't plan on living that long. So it takes him 400 years to finally say, that's enough, we're going to deal with this. So there's this problem that God's got on his hands. He's got to let Abraham's family grow into a great nation, but it can't happen in Israel. So he's got to get his people from Israel to Egypt. How does it happen? Joseph's brothers club him over the head. He gets sold as a slave. He ends up in Egypt. Is there as a slave. Ends up in prison. Is there for 14 years. And eventually what ends up happening is the cupbearer does remember him when Pharaoh needs some help. He says, hey, I know a guy who could help you. I met him in prison 2 years ago. I can't believe I forgot him. Joseph's like, yeah, I can't believe you forgot me either. But he gets out of prison. He helps out Pharaoh. And Pharaoh looks at him and says, man, you've got so much insight and so much understanding of the situation. I'm going to make you my number two. And Joseph ends up becoming the second most powerful man on the face of the earth after 14 years of misery. But he lived, and the reason why that happens is because he lived through every moment with the understanding that God was with him. And he can look back on his life and say, God was with me, and he sees that. And of course, Lena looked at him for a second. We put all the puzzle pieces together and says, wow, that is amazing what God did and how he worked that whole thing. And God's saying, you need to trust my identity and my track record and my history and what I've done in everybody else. I'm going to do the same thing in you. So going back to the opening clip, you got the narrator saying, Joseph, trust me that you're going to come out on top. And then there's the other clip in there that City Slickers, one of my all-time favorite movies. Just anybody remember City Slickers? Anybody in here not ever seen that movie? Okay, it's funny. It's old-time funny movie. That clip kept coming to mind as I was going through this past year. Because I always kind of thought it was just an interesting response when the guy says, my best and worst day were the same day. And in Joseph's life, towards the end of his life, he's asked by his brothers about his worst day. I mean, I don't think you could argue what Joseph's worst day was. I mean, it doesn't get much worse than the day that your brothers betrayed you, clubbed you over the head, told your dad that you were killed, you were sold as a slave, which ultimately led you to being imprisoned for 14 years, and falsely accused of rape. I mean, anybody can top that one last week? Anybody have a worse day than that? Joseph is asked about his worst day. And he says, don't get me wrong, it was a bad day, and what you guys did was very evil. But then he says, but God used it for good. My worst day was a day that God was doing something really, really good. And God makes that same promise to you and to me that God works all things for the good. There's no exception clause. There's no all except for the time when your brothers beat you over the head and sold you as a slave. No, it says even in that, God works all things for the good. And Joseph, with the hindsight perspective, can look back and say, you know, I knew in that moment God was with me. I didn't know what he was doing, but I knew he was with me. So I embraced it and I leaned into it. I responded how anybody would respond if they knew that God was in control and God was doing something. And looking back now, now I'm the second most powerful man on the face of the earth, I can see that was something good that God was doing there. And I've often wondered, I mean, I know what my worst day was. And I've wondered since that day, is there going to be a day where I look back and I'll actually say, God, you were doing something really good that day. You know, I can't fathom that. I can't fathom that. But the faith of a child can trust in that. The track record of Joseph and of Moses, of David and of Jesus and everybody else you read about in the Bible can testify to that. You can go to any one of them and ask them about their worst day, and it was a pivotal moment which was horrible for them. But it was a catalyst that thrust them into an epic story that led to the blessing that God wanted for them and for humanity. And it's just all in that one little key that you trust that God is with you. You know, the verse that I think I've read at every funeral I've ever done is from Psalm 23. Many of y'all know Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures and leads me beside the still waters, and he restores my soul. And then it goes on to say, but even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? He says, because you are with me. Because you are with me. I don't know what your puzzle piece is right now. I don't know what trial you're going through right now, what's about to hit you, what you're in the midst of right now, what you're just coming out of. But if you could live through this moment and do this trial with the understanding and knowledge that God's in complete control of your situation. This didn't catch him off guard. This didn't catch him by surprise. This is all a part of something he's working and a plan that he's working in your life. What can you do to respond to that in that way? What can you do to live through this moment as one who knows that God's in control of this and I just need to get everything out of this And if I got to be a divorced single mom, I'm going to be the best divorced single mom. I'm going to be the best mom there ever was. If I'm unemployed, I'm going to be the best unemployed guy and find the best thing to do with my time. I'm just going to sit at home, play video games, and say, woe is me. I'm going to redeem the moment. I'm going to take this as a vacation where I get to spend and invest in people and invest in my time in people. I'm going to find projects to do worthwhile. I'm going to do whatever I can to make the most of this time and get everything out of this and learn from this experience that I can. Because that's what anybody else would do if they knew that God was in complete control of their situation, that God had placed you in the situation and He was with you. Will you join with me as we close?